You never know what's gonna happen on a full moon, you know. So sad they had money, they had treasure buried there. I kept moving the stuff around and I noticed the bones. I said, man, that looks like human bones.
Please let me go see the dead body. Please let me see. They wouldn't let me.
Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
Every raindrop reflecting on the water as the sun shuts her eyes. Don't know why you'll uncover. Watch the tide rolling with the moonlight. Everything is silent on this Louisiana night.
Hello, welcome. We are Missing Magnolias, and today we are doing a mini-sode, and we have a very special guest, and that would be my dad. Hello, Father. This is John Bedford Johnny's joining us today. And we're here to talk about a family legend.
Yes, it's a legend that's been passed on for probably now 100 years or better, maybe. It's a legend of the Lugaru, the moon dog, which was a legend about some of my ancestors that it all started back in the Civil War area where Confederates would ride around in different towns and try to rustle up the young men to go to war. And they had this young man named Jean Janis. And every time they went to his family home, they could never find him. The only thing they ever saw around the home was it was a mangy wolf-looking dog. That's all they found was a dog. Jean Janis was never to be found. So the legend started that he was a moon dog, because he could never be caught. And also, they had women that would go wash their clothes in the bayou. And they had their soap and the stones where they'd beat their clothes and wash their clothes and everything. And they had a knife to cut their soap. One day, they were doing their laundry, and this mangy-looking dog came out of the bush. And he was like growling at him of some sort. So one of the ladies grabbed the knife that they used to cut the soap, and she threw it at him and hit him in the nose. He threw a big yap and ran back in the bush. The legend says not more than about 5 or 6 seconds later, Jean Janis comes out with a bloody nose. That also brought the legend even more, you know, so people kept calling Jean Janis the moon dog, the Lugaru. My daddy told me about it, and I'm sure his daddy told him about it. And they were raised in all that area, in Pointe-Noire area. That's the legend of the Lugaru.
Growing up, were they afraid, or?
It was basically in the family, which we all had fun with it, you know. And I'd tell my daughters and everything, you know, to say, you know, you got the Lugaru blood in you. You never know what's going to happen on a full moon, you know. So we joked around with it.
That's right. And we always thought it was a family story, you know, you tell around the campfire. Yeah. And then we found a published article one day.
somebody dug into it and published it about the legend of the Lugaru, which that's the first time that I saw anything published about it.
Wow.
So
must be real.
Yeah.
And you guys all wear silver. You're good.
Wear garlic around your neck.
You
a
never
vampire,
know.
Lugaru will
no
get
one
you.
Else has such cool family stories and lore. That's such a cool thing to have.
It's also sacred land, right? Pointe-Noire is supposed to be special.
Is it real?
They call it Pointe-Noire is a black point.
Okay.
So it could have had a little bit of, you know, weird stuff going on around that area.
There's also a saint down Pointe-Noire, right?
Right. Well, they call it a Cajun saint, I think she's soon going to be in sainthood in the near future. But, yeah, a lot of things going around in that Pointe-Noire area. Also around that area, there was the legend of the Jaywalkers. It's not a legend. It was true.
Oh, wow.
That they raided and stole all the people's money and everything. And that was a time right in back of my grandpa's land that the people would back there would backhoes and they were digging up the land. They were looking so sad they had money. They had treasure buried there that the Jayhawkers had left. So in all that area, they had quite a bit of
lively activity.
Yeah.
Do you know about the Fifole?
The Fifole is also a legend. I remember as a young boy, I was in the Boy Scouts, and we'd go camping into some of the woods around the area, and they talked about that, the Fifole. And it was, at the time I was young, I was kind of scared of it too. But come to find out, the Fifole was like a gas that would appear at night and glow, and they could see it move, you know. They call it the Fifole. I don't really know what the Fifole means. It was a frightening thing.
What about the man with the iron arm? You remember that? He would come after you if you stole his iron arm.
Oh, that was another story that one of my friends had told me about that. He could, we had went in the woods and he could see, supposedly had treasure. This dude would float around in the swampy area like he was guarding his treasure. And he had an iron arm. I don't know what that meant. He was either a pirate or some sort of something. And he kept his treasure there, and he roamed that area to keep people away. And he scared the hell out of you.
Was it John Lafitte?
No. I don't know.
Different pirate.
There's no telling.
Wow.
A lot of things went on around Church Point.
Yeah, now that I think about it, they also have that haunted cemetery, right? The historical slave cemetery, Bita Boys.
I never went there, but I've heard a lot of people that did go. And, you know, it's just scary, that's all.
I went as a teenager.
Ooh.
With a friend and her boyfriend, and he started messing around in the grave because a bunch of the graves were open. And he started messing around in the graves, and I was like, you better not do that. And he picked up a human skull, no joke. And I got real serious and said we needed to leave because that was super disrespectful. And the car didn't start.
Yeah, it was disrespectful. That's why I would never go there. I wouldn't want to mess with that.
Tell us more about just Church Point life. Tell us about your dad. How did he grow up?
Oh, my dad grew up on a farm. His dad was Arnaud Janis. Arnaud's dad was named Adam Janis. Adam, he had a lot of land. He was a pretty well wealthy man at the time. My old uncle and them they told me a story one time. They'd bury their money in those days. They didn't trust banks. So him, his daddy, and my uncle, and Adam, they went into the woods somewheres where they told my uncle to stay at the wagons. And they went out in the woods. And when they came back, they had a sack or some container with something in it, he said. And they put it in the back of the little wagon, which was a little one-horse-drawn buggy. And he said that it was so heavy that they couldn't ride in the wagon. They had to just let the horse and pull it. So he was serious. He said that he thinks it was money, but it was like coins, you know.
There's treasure out there. Did Papa have a refrigerator growing up?
Probably no. In those days, they use ice. If they had a refrigerator, it was basically ice. But they had cellars, you know. They dug in cellars. Usually the temperature of the earth is around 68 degrees. We kept food pretty well from spoiling. My grandfather had a lot of, he had 80 acres of land, so he had a lot of land to work. And he had like four sons. They'd work from sun up to sundown. And he'd come home and in the evening, they'd eat and they'd go right to sleep. There was no time for nothing else but to work and sleep. They had no screens on the windows. I remember he told me they had some fornet, they call that a shutters. And they closed the shutters if they could, but since summer nights it was so hot that they'd just lay down on the floor and sleep. And he said they had so many mosquitoes, but he was so tired he wouldn't feel them. But basically, you know, they had fresh meat every once in a while when they'd slaughter animals, but their main meal was like vegetables they grew in the garden, a lot of cornbread. He said he ate a lot of cornbread. That's good. I like cornbread.
Did you ever participate in one of those boucheries?
Oh, yeah. every year they'd slaughter about five hogs, and a whole family would come, kill up to five hogs in a day. They made cracklings, and they made boudin. They made the blood boudin. I remember my mama would stand right there by the hog, and she'd catch the blood. My dad would knife them. They wouldn't shoot them. Sorry to say that, but they'd cut their neck. And she'd catch the blood and pour salt in it. It kept it from the blood from coagulating. And they used that to make the black boudin. And they made the cracklings and boudin. They called it a backbone stew, which they had that fresh meat. And boy, it was delicious. I enjoyed that.
And it was like an all-day thing, right?
Oh, it was all day. Wow. When they had five hogs, it was all day. They had boiling water to scald them, to take the hair off. And that's the first part of it. And then they had to clean it. And then they'd do their job and slaughtering the hog. And, you know, nothing was wasted. The only thing that was really wasted was the squeal of the hog. Everything else was used.
So nothing probably scares you growing up on a farm and, you know, except for the rougarou, maybe.
I tell you what, I didn't grow up on the farm, but I stayed a lot of time there with my grandfather, especially when they needed me. We'd brand cattle, we'd do a lot of things, pick cotton, a lot of cotton, dig potatoes, break corn. I called myself a mule skinner because my uncle would let me sit in the wagon and run the mules while he'd break the corn. And I kind of feel sorry for him sometimes because, man, he'd run into a wasp nest. Oh, my God. He'd get stung. Well, we did a lot of things, and a lot of things were fun because, you know, I grew up in the Church Point. It wasn't much of a city, but I spent a lot of time in the country doing country things. It was fun. When they called me, I went. Because I enjoyed it. And they paid me $1 a day. But $1 a day was a lot of money back then. I'm not that old, but I'm old enough to say I'd make $5 a week because I'd stay there. I wouldn't come home. I'd just spend a night at my grandpa's. $1 a day. But back then, they had a little dairy parade in Church Point. We'd sell hamburgers, ice cream, and all that. We'd go on a Saturday, me and my friends. We could get 4 hot dogs and a big, I don't know how big the Coke was, but it was a lot bigger than 16 ounces. But anyway, for $1.
Wow.
Try to get that
Damn.
Today.
Yeah. Groceries, $100, $75.
Right? I remember when a bag of chips used to cost 25 cents. Now you can't get anything for a quarter.
And I tell you what, I downed those 4 hot dogs and that Coke. I was swollen at the end, but I enjoyed them. They were good. We used to call it the Dairy Pride movie. He had a nickname. His name was Pyran. We all call him Pyran. That's Godfather.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten?
I've eaten pig brain. My mama used to cook that. Like I tell you, nothing was wasted. She'd fry that up and with eggs and rice. And I tell you what, it was good. But that's the weirdest thing I've ever had.
That wins.
Yeah. But also that they call it tripe. I think that's the stomach of the cow. But as all of that is something that back then, that's how they survived on it. They didn't waste anything. Nothing was wasted. When my grandma made sausage, they took the hog lard from the cracklings and they stuffed the sausage in a big jar they'd have, and then they poured that hog lard over that. And that's all they had to do was put a rag and tie it. It kept the sausage fresh. That's all. And when they needed the sausage, they'd take it out, cut what they needed, and put it back in the oil. As long as the air didn't get to it, it didn't spoil. And it was also smoked, so that helped out, too, on the preservative of it all. But everything, we didn't eat nothing there that had preservatives in it. They have so much of that in our food process now today that it affects us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Michelle's known for her world-class gumbo. Does she get that from you?
My side of the family, yeah, because my wife, Kathy, her mother, they were military people. I don't know if they ever ran into gumbo until they come to Louisiana, but that's where she got introduced to that when she come to Louisiana. I don't know if they did gumbo up north or wherever they were at, mostly Texas and Boston and all, you know, overseas. But yeah, that's where she got her gumbo talent from.
And we cook a lot and we cook too much because nobody's ever going to come hungry or worried about not eating enough.
No, we always had plenty to eat. Everybody never went home hungry.
We are the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes like serial killers and the random one-off murder. We will tell you about bizarre occurrences like alien abductions and monsters in the dark. And we just might get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories.
At the very end of every show, we like to lighten things up and cleanse the palate from the tragic and terrifying stories. So we end our time with a chaser. You might get to hear crazy stories about our pets or just silly movie recommendations.
Give us a listen. We are the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast.
Just to round us out, can you give us your best Cajun yell before we go?
I kind of lost that a while back. I'm so congested. But I'll try.
Or a Lugaru howl, whichever you prefer. Thank you. That was perfect.
Some people might not be aware that Louisiana had, in the 1971, its own Woodstock after the big music festival. And you have a story, perhaps, for us.
Well, I do, but it was kind of like the real Woodstock that I heard of. I mean, I didn't go to the real one. But this one was similar to the real one because they had everything that the Woodstock, the original one, had. Like I said, me and my friend went there. It was $30 a head at the time, and we didn't have the money, but we had the gas to get there. And we heard that the Hell's Angels were security, and they were, if they catch you crossing, they have a canal that surrounded the area, and also the Chaffalai River was the backside. So you couldn't really get in without being noticed or something. We tried. We'd say, well, they break our legs. I went in first. It was a canal. It was about waist deep or maybe a little deeper. So I just went in there, and I come out. They had a fence, like a barbed wire fence. I came out, and I looked around before I poked out, and I started off walking. And my friend was behind me. And when I turned around, and some dude had him he had a 2x4 in his hand, and he had him. And I said, oh Lord, he's gonna break his legs. But he talked his way out. He said, the Hell's Angel guy didn't see him come out. He just saw he was wet. He asked him, he said, where you come from? He says, man, I just come from the river. That's why I'm wet. And he actually believed him, and he let him go. But I just kept walking. I said, well, if your legs get broken, my friend, I'm sorry for you, but I'm not getting mine broken. So he ended up catching up with me, and we went in there, and it was there was 100,000 people there.
Oh my gosh, who played?
And Sly and the Family Stone played, and I forget, they had several other bands that played that day. But then it was dispersed after that. I don't know what happened. Some people say the people took off and stole the money or something. And they had people on U-Haul trucks with, I mean, drugs, any kind of drug you wanted, in bags. And they had one dude, he was wasn't dressed like Santa Claus, but he had a bag as big as Santa Claus. And he was just hollering out, you know, marijuana for sale, that. And it had state troopers on horses. They didn't do anything. This was like, hey, it's free. Do what you want. They had the bad LSD in the watermelons. They had a big stage. They were saying, do not eat the watermelon.
Caution.
Because some people were ODing. They had a medical tent and everything, you know. They had a hot air balloon that would you could take you up for a ride for a certain amount of money.
What?
We were broke, so we couldn't go there. But
the flamethrower with the wicker basket.
But they had people tenting all around the river, And
once in a lifetime event. Yeah. They'll never do that again.
Yeah, they'll never. They said they would never do that again. And it was that Sunday. That's when we had gone. And I'd work in Baton Rouge with my dad, and we'd commute every day. And on the way home that afternoon, they had hippies all over the road hitchhiking to go home. I mean, it was all over the place. But yeah, it was an experience that I'll probably never experience again. I've been to a lot of concerts, but nothing like that.
Nothing with the mosquitoes and the mud.
It's funny, I was watching an episode of Naked and Afraid during the pandemic, and they were in the Atchafalaya Basin.
I saw that one.
That was the season. Yeah, and it was like unreasonably cold that weekend, and they were miserable with the mosquitoes, and they had covered themselves in mud, and then they got some kind of bacteria from the mud because it wasn't really mud. It was nutria rat feces.
Oh, my God.
And I was just laughing and laughing and laughing at those fools that they would voluntarily put themselves in that situation. And then I realized we had gone camping that same weekend.
You're a carpenter, right? You work with wood. Anything fun that you're working on?
Carpentry-wise, I'll tell you a story of what happened to me.
Oh, good. Okay.
It was in a bank in Abbeville, and we were redoing the second floor because the bank was at the bottom at the time, and the top part was many different things at the time, they told me. And it used to house the sheriff's department at one time, the National Guard. It used to be a restaurant and a dance hall up there. I was working for J.B. Mouton at the time. And we were remodeling the whole top story of the building. And they had chimneys in every room. Me and my coworker, we were told to go in there and resurface the floor with some plywood. So I had to get closer to the fireplace, and they had a huge iron decorated thing that would close it, you know, they would seal it. So I had to take that off so I could get my plywood as close as I could to the chimney, because they wanted to keep the chimneys. And as I opened it up and I put the lid to the side, I noticed they had some clothes down at the bottom and a pair of shoes. So I said to myself, well, look here, somebody's sticking. And then hid some clothes and shoes in here. Wow-ly. But anyway, as I moved it around, I noticed some bones. And I noticed it was some overalls. So I looked in the overall, and they had a wallet. And they had a picture of a young child and a few other pictures. But no definite ID. It was just a Social Security card that had his name on it. I kept moving the stuff around, and I noticed the bones. I said, man, that looks like human bones, because I'd watch a lot of CSI when it came out. So I decided to stick my hand in the flume to see if there was anything else in there, and I felt another rag. I said, oh, we got some more cloth in here. And when I pulled it down, the leg bone came down. The foot was still in the sock, and it was just the foot and the leg bone.
Did you scream? Because I would have screamed.
No, I didn't. I turned to my coworker. I said, this looks like a crime scene to me. So he freaked out. And I called my superintendent. He wasn't there in the building. So and by then, everybody wanted to see. So everybody was coming in there, taking their phones, taking pictures and everything. So finally, the bank manager came up, and he came in there, and oh, Lord, and they stopped everything. Oh, we had to pull away from everything. And the police came, and they gave, you know, I told them everything, what I did and what I saw. I didn't see much, but, and a statement, in other words. And they blocked it off, and the next day they came, and they tore down the chimney to get the rest of the skeleton out. Come to find out, they knew who he was from the Social Security card. And he's been missing for 27 years.
Oh, my gosh.
In other words, they think he went on the roof to try to get down into that building through the chimney, and he got stuck because he went down feet first. The building was unoccupied at the time. So he could have hollered and screamed all he wanted. Nobody would have heard him. And in the later years, they re-roofed the roof, and they capped all the chimneys, so they couldn't tell if there was anything in there until I found him. But his mother, he had been married, and his, I don't want to mention his name, because he had been married and had a child, and his wife left to go to Texas, left him, they were separated. And his mother thought he had went to Texas and never came back. And, you know, good Lord works in mysterious ways. I mean, I found him, but his mother was still living. She had closure, found out her son was where her son was, and he had been missing for 27 years.
Wow.
That was another freaky thing that happened to me.
So dad finds one missing. Let's count. Dad finds one missing person. My sister finds another missing person. So the nation's leading missing persons expert has found zero human remains, and my family has found two.
My son-in-law called me up and he said, father-in-law, they got a skeleton in my backyard. He said, oh, my goodness. So I went down. He went, didn't live far, down to Peteville. Sure enough, we picked up that piece of plywood, and there was, I didn't know who it was, but it was a woman, her full skeleton. She was white as snow. All the bones are white.
I was 13 years old. Mom gets the phone call. Hey, there's a body in the backyard. Mom says, come on, we got to go. My friend Jackie was with me. She lived in the trailer behind the house. So Jackie's like, please, can I come? Mom says, you gotta ask your mom. So she runs, asks her mom, please, can I go with Michelle and Miss Kathy to see the dead body? Her mom's like, I guess so. So then we get there, the cops aren't there yet, and dad goes and looks, and he comes back, and I say, please, please let me go see the dead body. Please let me see. They wouldn't let me.
Oh,
I was real pissed off about that. I mean, smart parenting choice. Mm-hmm. I probably, looking back, would not let the 13-year-old see the human remains. Yeah. But also, probably a good indicator of what mm-hmm. my future would look like. It could have gone in a lot of directions now that I think about
it. Yeah, it went that way, huh?
Before we go, do you have a fun Michelle story?
Gasp.
Every time we go to Walmart, Michelle was missing. We'd have to hunt, get them to close the door, so we thought maybe somebody had kidnapped her and all. She'd hide in the clothes racks.
And I'd
but that's what she'd do, and she wouldn't do it just one time. No. Mostly all the time. We'd have to tie her up.
Can't go to Walmart. Not allowed.
There's definitely a theme in where you ended up.
Yes. Again, could have gone in a lot of directions.
This was such a treat. I encourage more people to speak to their parents and grandparents, because you guys have such a wealth of knowledge and such great stories, and I don't think we take advantage enough of it.
It's true, because there's a lot of stuff that I regret not asking, you know. It's like my uncles, they were both in World War II. One was a POW for over a year, and he told me some stories that were really bad. And my other uncle, he was out in overseas for 4 years. He became, they call it at the time, shell shot. He lost it. And his whole life was ruined. See, he went in at 18, you know, and he came back. He couldn't handle it. So a lot of things happen to family members that you need to hear the stories, you know?
Yeah.
And ask the questions. And I regret not doing that for a lot of the stuff that I hear a little bit of that I never heard before. But you catch just a little bit of it, you know? You don't catch the real thing. But yeah, anybody out there that listens to that, talk to your grandparents and your aunts and uncles, and if they have stories, listen to them, write them down, they pass it on.
And ask about the day you were born. Somebody, I read that somewhere. You should always ask your parents what happened on the day you were born. And that's a fun thing that you don't think about not having that knowledge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Until next time, I hope you'll be joining us again.
For more stories?
More stories, yes.
All right, we're out.